One Man's Family, winner of 43 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 25th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, talk of a wedding. Pinky Murray swings off the evening bus at Camino Del Mar and Seacliff Drive as his brother Hank drives by in his Bernadotte convertible.
Hank? Hey, Hank! Hey, how about a lift home? Oh, well, that's okay. Ride home would have been too easy. Old Floyd Ireson with his hard heart, tarred and feathered and carried in a cart. Par for the course, that's what happens to me. Hi ho ho, I'm home.
Who's that, Hank? How are you?
Winded.
Huh?
I say I'm winded, trying to catch a Bernadotte.
Whose?
Yours.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry. Did I drive right past you?
Oh, sure. Hey, aren't you home early?
Yeah, didn't Uncle Paul phone you, too?
No. Why, what for?
About Tony.
Huh?
He's going to fly Tony and her fiancé and some immigration fella back to New Jersey tonight.
He is?
He said to get home fast if I wanted to say goodbye.
Nobody called me.
Well, maybe they tried to reach
him. Tony, hello down there. That you, Tony?
Mom, I don't think she's here. We just got home.
Hank, Paul says to come on up.
Mom's up in Uncle Paul's studio. They say come on up.
I'm beginning to feel like grandfather. Nobody tells me anything either.
Come on in. Uncle Paul's on the phone talking to Washington.
Yeah? Yeah.
How are you, Pinky?
Ah, good-o.
Look, this kid didn't leave Hungary until after November 10th. He's a Class A freedom fighter. Sure, I know that. We expect to go through channels. But I want you people to rally around back there. Yeah. Okay, Sam. See you in the morning. Good. Now do what you can. Hi there, Hank. How are you?
Oh, hi, Uncle Paul.
Oh, Pinky. Didn't see you.
Yes, sir.
Well, sit down. Now then, we'll take off about 6:30. Excuse me.
Hank, will you drive them to the airport?
Sure, glad to.
Dan took our car in town today, and Father's out with his somewhere. He started for the post office to pick up a certified letter 2 hours ago. We can't imagine where he is.
Hello, Miss Dickinson? Yes, all set now. 6:30. No, the F7. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Three passengers. Tony Ballatin, her fiancé, and Ed Ciotti from Immigration. Yeah, will you? Gassed up and ready to go. Thank you. Now then, Hazel, where were we?
You started to tell me what Claudia said.
Oh, yes. Claudia told Tony she wants to give them a wedding.
How wonderful.
May I say something? I left here early this morning, and all I know is that some guy got here illegally, and he turns out to be Tony's fiancé. Can you explain what's happened? Or do I have to catch it on the wing like grandfather? I didn't even know Tony was engaged.
Well, nobody knew it, Pink. She didn't tell us.
Hello? Who is home?
Now, there she is. Tell her to come up.
Tony, we're in the studio.
Well, I'm coming right up.
Pinky, she thought a young man had been killed. That's why she never mentioned him to any of us.
Come on in, Tony. Hi. Here you're going away.
Oh, Pinky. Hello. Hello, everybody. Am I late?
Almost ready.
Oh, Paul, Joan wishes to ride to the airport with us. I have left my bags in her porch.
Good.
Pinky, you look so sad. Oh, this is a happy time. Someone I love who was dead is alive again.
Yeah. Great-o.
Pinky's trying to get used to your being engaged, Tony.
I know. This is difficult. Pinky has had trouble getting used to being engaged himself.
If you're trying to think of the word, young fellow, it's touché.
What's this about a wedding?
Claudia has offered this. I think it is most generous to offer a wedding when the bridegroom is detained by immigration authorities for illegal entry. It is an act of true friendship to offer a wedding to strangers who could ruin your reputation.
No, no, I'll telephone Detroit again.
Uh-oh.
The car is a lemon, and this time I'll speak to the chairman of the board.
Oh, dear. Father's had trouble with his car again. Shall we all go down?
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
I'd like to point out an interesting observation. How easy it is to accept a fact without knowing any of the circumstances which made it a fact. For example, the majority of American voters vote for a president and vice president every 4 years. But how many of those voters know that there's a constitutional amendment which controls the election of those two officers? Before 1800, Americans voted differently. Through their legislatures, they voted for two candidates from a list of the most capable men in the country. The candidate who got the greatest number of votes became president. The one with the next highest number of votes was vice president. But during the Jefferson-Adams contest in 1800, this system hit a snag. Jefferson and Aaron Burr were running on the Republican ticket. Adams and Thomas Pinckney on the Federalist. When the electoral votes were counted, Adams and Pinckney were defeated. But Jefferson and Burr came up with the same number of votes. This meant that the tie had to be broken by the House of Representatives voting by state. And that's when the trouble started. It seems the Republicans had touted Jefferson for the presidency and Burr for the vice presidency. But with Adams and Pinckney out of the race, a strong Federalist faction, strictly anti-Jefferson, began campaigning for the election of Burr for president. When the first ballot by state was taken, neither Jefferson nor Burr got the needed majority. And for an entire week, the voting continued to be deadlocked. All in all, 36 different ballots were taken. Then Alexander Hamilton, the strong man of the Federalist Party, stepped in. Although he had been a lifelong political enemy of Jefferson's, when it came to choosing between him and Burr for the presidency, he considered Jefferson the better man and urged the Federalists to give Jefferson their vote. Hamilton turned the tide, and Jefferson was elected president, Burr vice president. Before the next election, the 12th Amendment was added to the Constitution, simplifying the election of a president, separate from the election of vice president. That's how your American Constitution works.
A strange, pervading quiet has now settled on 264 Seacliff Drive. The elderly gentleman who recently concluded a tempestuous telephone conversation finds himself very much alone.
Fanny, are you upstairs? Paul, did you go? Who's in the kitchen? Fanny, may I come out in the kitchen? Fanny? Oh, Hazel.
Mother's out.
Oh, I see. Where are the others?
Hank drove Paul and Tony to the airport. They're flying to New Jersey at 6:30 with her fiancé and the man from immigration.
Did Pinky go too?
Pinky's upstairs, Father. He's changing. He has a date with Greta.
Hazel, are you angry with me?
Not at all.
Well, you whipped those egg whites as if you were angry with me.
Not at all, Father.
You see, I was on my way to the post office to pick up a certified letter when my car broke down again. So I called the factory.
I know, Father. I heard it.
Brand new $5,000 automobile. I believe in telling these things to the chairman of the board.
Did they let you talk to him?
No, he was out.
Then all that for nothing.
Well, I didn't realize Antonia was leaving.
She tried to say goodbye, and you waved her away.
Oh, no, I didn't actually wave her away. Oh, no.
Mom, I'm going now.
Come out here, Pinky. Oh, how nice you look.
Thanks. Well, good night, Grandfather.
Are you all right?
Sure. Great shape. Never felt better, old.
Then smile.
Yeah. You know, this has been going on ever since high school. Whenever a nice gal that I like gets engaged to some other guy, well, I don't know, the glitter kind of goes off everything for a couple of days. It's funny. Can't marry them all.
You marry Greta, Pinky, and that worry will be over. You'll be fully occupied then, young man.
Yes, sir. Good night, Mom.
Good night, dear. Give Greta our love.
Pinky, my car is parked not far from the bus stop. If you can start it, you're welcome to take it.
No thanks, Grandfather. I'd rather ride the bus. Good night.
Hazel.
Yes?
If I telephone the airport, do you suppose I could speak to Antonia before they take off?
Call Paul's office. Maybe his secretary can connect you.
If I waved her away, that was unintentional. I was talking to a Detroit operator. It was very frustrating.
Don't bother to explain that. Tony heard you.
Well, I wouldn't want her to leave with the impression of all that confusion. I'll telephone her and say a proper goodbye.
Of the Barbers in just a moment.
You know, every once in a while, the sounds of war yield to a nicer note. Such a one came from Korea, from the 27th Regiment of the 25th Infantry Division. It's an outfit of superb combat soldiers who built a legendary reputation in the Korean fighting. But they built something else along with it. When they were stationed in Osaka, Japan in 1949, they learned that a small orphanage was in bad shape, poor buildings, little clothing, and no assurance from day to day that there would even be enough food for the more than 150 kids who called it home. Well, the regiment adopted that orphanage. They began to take up collections. They contributed food and medicine and clothing. And when the regiment moved to the Korean battlefront, the work went on. Their first payday in combat, those guys deducted a ½ million yen and sent it back to Japan for their orphanage. You can bet those kids have never forgotten the men of the 27th. Such acts by you and your friends today are shaping our world of tomorrow.
In Hangar 14 at International Air Freight, as Paul Barber's new F-7 is rolled out for the line, Miss Tony Ballatin, sitting at a desk in the foreman's office, holds a receiver tightly to her ear, smiling uncertainly as she listens.
But Father Barber, all men shout. My Yojet sometimes shouts. I like men who can make themselves heard, even in Detroit.
Hey, Tony, Uncle Paul says come on.
Excuse me, Father Barber. What, Hank?
Joe and the immigration officer, they're here. Uncle Paul's ready to go. Come on.
Father Barber, I will write you. I will write you many letters, as long as I can. Yes, I love you all very much. Goodbye.
Hey, you made that sound kind of final.
Oh, Hank, I do hope they will let us come back for a wedding, at least for a wedding.
But you're going to live in the United States, Tony. You're going to be a citizen.
Oh, Hank, how naive you are for such a wise young man.
Hey, you two, come on. We're going.
Coming, Paul. Please. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to delay. Come on, Hank. Let us cheer up. This will be my pleasantest memory, whatever happens.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 18, Book 126, Pinky in a Moment of Indiscretion. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 43 national awards, now in its 25th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.